The yellow one!
I'm walking here!
Good afternoon and welcome to the only show you need to get you through your Thursday, to get you through your commute, to get you through the progressive insanity of Seattle and D.C. politics. You're listening to The Jason Rancho. We are live on AM 770 KTTH. We are streaming live on the KTTH smartphone app. Got a lot to get to. Only an hour left to do it. Seattle was chosen to conduct the first coronavirus vaccine test nationwide. We'll tell you what that means. We've got updates on how many people have voted in Washington so far. This upcoming primary on March 10th, not looking so good. Plus, the Washington State Fraternal Order of Police is sounding the alarms about the Benton County Sheriff. We'll tell you why when we come back. But first, let's get you home the right way with Right Way Traffic. There is a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending at home?
So there are more consequences to our light on crime approach to drug dealers, to drug addicts living on the streets, doing whatever it is they want to do out in the open, because we don't prosecute drug dealers in King County. Not really. Most of the time, we allow these drug deals to happen out in the open. Go into downtown Seattle. It's still happening out in the open because they know they're not going to get arrested, because they know, the cops know, it's not worth doing the arrest when you've got King County Prosecutor Dan Satterberg and Seattle City Attorney Pete Holmes unwilling to do their jobs. We have on the books a personal possession policy in King County and in Seattle specifically. If you're caught with drugs that are for your personal possession, so we're talking about a small amount up to, I believe, 4 to 9 grams of whatever it is your drug of choice. If you're caught with those drugs, you're not arrested. You're not forced into treatment. And as a consequence, I think people are more willing to buy drugs than they would otherwise, because they understand that, legally speaking, not really any consequences. And now we've got two cases of teenagers, both from Bellevue High School, suffering an overdose. So now a mom of a 16-year-old boy who died from an overdose just back in September, Olga Davidov-Beer, she's speaking out. Because her son, Lucas, died after he took a pill that he thought was Percocet, but it turned out to be laced with fentanyl.
I walked to his room just to cover him. It was early morning before I go to bed, and I found his cold body.
Now imagine that for a moment as a mother. Imagine that. Walking in to your son's room, and his body is already cold. Well, Cairo 7 is reporting that Bellevue police see a 17-year-old and an 18-year-old, both, again, from Bellevue High School. They were found unresponsive in their homes late Saturday night and early Sunday morning. Now, they were found by family members who were able to save them. That's the good news in this. They saved them with the help of first responders using CPR and naloxone. Now, Bellevue police say that both of these teenagers did exactly what Lucas did, which was they took Percocet and it turned out to be laced with a deadly dose of fentanyl. Or a potentially deadly dose of fentanyl. Because had that family not reacted in the way that they did, had first responders not show up as quickly as they did, this would have ended a completely different way. And so, Olga, this mother wants to sound the alarms.
Lucas will always be in my heart. And I just want to tell about drugs. Because as long as I talk about it, Lucas is alive.
And that's why she's talking about it. And the fact of the matter is, this is not easy to figure out. When we're talking about these pills that are laced with fentanyl, Bellevue Police Narcotics Officer Jim Keene tells Cairo 7 TV this.
When I first started in narcotics, it was very few and far between that we heard cases like this. And now it's happening all the time. And the reason that is because these fake pills are prolific out on the street.
They're prolific. And sometimes folks get a batch of Percocet or whatever it is they think they're taking. Oxycodone was another issue that was happening in Snohomish County where a teenager died of an overdose. And maybe you've got a bottle of these pills and someone takes one and they seem fine, so they take another and they think they're going to be fine. But the fact of the matter is, that's not always how it works.
Even if you see people taking pills and they seem to be okay, that doesn't mean that the pill that you have isn't a lethal dose.
two other teenagers could have been killed as a result of the policies that we have in place in King County and Seattle. Policies that are pushed forward by people who refuse to acknowledge that there is a role for law enforcement in drug addiction. They believe, whether we're talking about Dan Satterberg or Pete Holmes or Jenny Durkin, they believe that throwing an addict in jail doesn't treat them. And you know what? They're right. Throwing an addict in jail does not actually treat the addiction. But it does show that there are some consequences, and it does give some officers leverage to either stop the behavior of the addict or at least go after the drug dealer. I don't want to throw an addict in jail. I want to throw them in mental in addiction treatment services. That's what I would prefer. But I do want that officer to be able to use as leverage over whoever that addict is the threat of jail time if they don't give us details so we can go after these drug dealers. When you have a policy in place, as we do here, that says you can carry up to X amount of heroin, of Percocet laced with fentanyl, and we're not going to throw you in jail and prosecute, you know what happens with those drug dealers? They carry less product on them. They keep a stash nearby. And yes, I suppose it's inconvenient for them to have to keep upping their supply to sell to whomever it is they're selling to. But they know that if they are to get caught with some quote-unquote personal possession amounts on them, they are not going to be prosecuted. That makes the jobs of officers so much more difficult. Part of the way we go after addiction without actually throwing the addict in jail is making sure that we're going after the supply that's being pushed into our communities. And it's getting in the hands of not just homeless individuals who are dealing with addiction, who are stealing, breaking into homes, breaking into cars, stealing stuff that they can sell so they can then afford to buy these drugs. It's getting in the hands of teenagers. And maybe I was just a very nervous teenager, but oh my gosh. I would never, ever, ever, even if I wanted to, I would never at any point in my childhood think to go ahead and illegally purchase drugs out of the fear that I would get caught and I would get thrown in jail. That fear doesn't exist. Now, do I think a whole bunch of kids now are doing this because they don't have any consequences? No, not a lot. But you know what? There's too many. And I know as a result of these policies, we have drugs that are being brought into our community by nefarious actors who are taking advantage of this light on crime approach, and it's not working. What has happened over the course of the last decade? We have seen an increase in overdose deaths in almost every single category of drug. We right now have a meth crisis. We didn't have that meth crisis 2 years ago. But we have it now. We've seen an alarming uptick in meth overdoses. We've seen an alarming uptick in fentanyl overdoses. Cocaine up. Heroin stagnant. That's your big win. An already too high number of people dying from heroin overdoses over the course of the last couple years, it's remained about the same. That's your big win. And despite the data suggesting that our current policy is not working, what do we have? We have lawmakers who are doubling down on the approach. Some of whom have just completely given up and said, oh, well, let's just have heroin injection sites. Let's open them up all over the place. I mean, not in my neighborhood. I live in Queen Anne. Let's not put it there. Let's put it in Lake City. Let's put it in Northgate. Let's put it in downtown Seattle and Capitol Hill. Don't put it in my neighborhood. This is what happens. And despite bodies piling up, dying from overdoses, despite teenagers in Bellevue and in Ballard and in parts of Snohomish County, despite them having these overdose deaths or near deaths, do you get any sense that there is an urgency to tackling this issue? Do you get any sense that the left that's in charge in this case in Seattle and King County, do you hear them talking about this all that often? Do you hear them saying, we got to do something, we got to think outside of the box? No, because they think they're already thinking outside the box. They think that, that this policy of a hands-off approach is compassionate. How many people have to die for us to say that this kind of compassion actually kills? How many kids have to have overdoses before we say, you know what, maybe we're going to change our approach to the way we deal with drugs. I get not wanting to punish addicts. Totally get it. But you got to do something. And this hands-off approach is being exploited by bad actors, drug dealers. And we're not doing anything. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. When we come back, we've got some data coming out as to how many people so far have voted for the March 10th primary. Gonna be honest. Numbers don't look so good. We'll tell you why when we come back. But first, let's get you home the right way with Right Way Traffic.
Bellevue to Linwood on northbound 405 has moved back up to an hour and 15 minutes due to a crash at this time. North 405 at 522 in Bothell taking up the express toll lane. Southbound 405, that's going to be sluggish from Bellevue into Renton. Northbound I-5, you'll find congestion coming into, through, and out of downtown Seattle. Your Seattle to Linwood commute, 45 minutes. And in Tacoma, no accidents or stalls, but northbound I-5, that's going to be busy from DuPont as you head towards JBLM main gate. Do you want to hear something amazing? Discover matches all the cash back you earn on your credit card at the end of your first year. Learn more at discover.com/match. Limitations apply. You're listening to AM 770 KTTH.
There is a medical issue that can be embarrassing for men, but it doesn't have to be. Erectile dysfunction. Stop feeling shame or anger and start enjoying life again. Connect with a Affirm clinic who can help you with regenerative, pain-free treatment using focused shockwaves. Call them 206-231-6000. That's 206-231-6000 or affirmclinic.com. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Let's get political.
So ballots are due in Washington State on March 10th, and we now have some numbers courtesy of the Secretary of State's office suggesting that not a lot of you have voted yet. Now, it's not the worst news in the world because there is some context to these low numbers. Just about 10% of registered voters in Washington State decided to cast their ballots. And the numbers are leading, obviously, stronger in the Democratic side with 220,000 versus 185,000 votes cast for Donald Trump. This according to the Seattle Times. Now, the lower voter turnout is expected for Republicans, right? There's a number of reasons why. But you would think that you're going to see more of a turnout for the Democrats. Now, again, to be clear, there's some context to the low numbers. I'm expecting to see some good numbers out of King County. Seattleites, for the most part, especially the younger ones, tend to wait until the last minute. Right now, there's about 7% of registered voters in King County that have voted. We expect that number to go up because King County is overwhelmingly Democratic. And you've got an actual race on the Democratic side. And so the reason why, my assumption is, a whole bunch of people are waiting is they're waiting for Super Tuesday. They want to see where things stand before they cast their ballot. Now, my assumption for some groups, they're trying to figure out whether or not they're going to go with Joe Biden or Michael Bloomberg. Now, the last poll that was taken in Washington State, I think it was Stuart Elway or maybe it was Crosscut. This happened, I want to say, like a month and a half ago. It showed Joe Biden in a very clear lead with, I believe, 35% of the vote. And then it was Bernie Sanders. Now, certainly since that poll happened, we've had three contests in which Joe Biden has been completely massacred. And so it's possible that Bernie Sanders is going to take the lead, or the folks who were supporters of Joe Biden are now looking towards Michael Bloomberg. So they're waiting to see what Super Tuesday looks like because, you know what? They want to make sure if they're going to ditch Joe Biden that they're ditching him when they should, right? When there's some space for a Michael Bloomberg to come in and be the quote-unquote establishment Democrat. There's also the other part of the electorate that's trying to decide, presumably, between Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. They're both going after generally the same demographic, younger, more progressive, further to the left. Elizabeth Warren slightly less so than Bernie Sanders, but they're generally in the same direction. And so they're waiting, again, to see where both of those candidates will be after Super Tuesday. Now, Elizabeth Warren has no shot at outright winning the nomination. As right, there's no way that she can do that. But she's going to stay in as long as she can so she can get to a potentially brokered convention where she can come up there and raise her hand and say, look, turns out I got a plan for a brokered convention. Bernie is way, way, way too far to the left. He's a socialist. There's no way he's going to win. Michael Bloomberg, the establishment, come on. This is a billionaire who bought his way into this election. Don't give it to him. Give it to me. I'm someone who is in the center of both of them. I'm not as far to the left as Bernie, but I've got a lot of bona fides with the activist crowd. And I'm obviously not this billionaire who's trying to buy the election. I'm just a millionaire and I don't really talk about my money. But Michael Bloomberg is not going to get the activist base. I will. And by the way, I'm also going to get the establishment Democrats because they realize I'm not Bernie Sanders. So she's going to try to be that compromise candidate. Now, whether or not that's a moving argument, I don't know. Doesn't seem like a very good argument, but it seems that's the way that she's setting this up. Remember, she was in Seattle just last weekend. That's after Super Tuesday when we vote, which means she's in this for the long game. Bernie Sanders was just here. Michael Bloomberg opened a whole bunch of campaign offices here. He's also in it for the long game. So we'll end up seeing what happens, but I expect those numbers to go up. Now, on the Republican side, seems pretty obvious why there is not a whole bunch of people voting yet. They're in no real rush. They know that Donald Trump is going to be the nominee on the Republican side. There's no other candidate even on the ballot here in Washington State. So they're in no rush. But at the same time, there has been a lot of people having some concern over the way that they have to declare whether or not they're a Democrat or Republican by marking it on the outside of their ballot. There is this suspicion, I think misplaced, but there is suspicion that a postal worker is going to look that you voted for a Republican. They're going to know you voted for Donald Trump, and they're just going to mysteriously lose your ballot. Kim Wyman, Secretary of State, was on the show just a couple days ago, said, okay, relax on that. They're not going to do it because of this.
You know, the mail system is governed by federal law, and that is, those are felonies, and they actually do investigate that as crimes, mm-hmm. and those people are prosecuted. But if people are uncomfortable putting their ballot into the mail box for that reason, then I encourage them to go and put it in a ballot drop box. And those ballot drop boxes, there's about 500 of them across the state. There's a list on our website, and you can put those in, and then the election workers have to account for every single one of those ones that's in the ballot box and throughout the process. So election workers don't throw away anybody's ballot. They have a very thorough reconciliation process for every ballot that's turned in, and they have to account for it. And even if they don't count it, they have to list it.
So she's basically making the argument why you should relax a little bit. Now, some people will still say, you know what, I just don't feel comfortable until the primary because I don't want to publicly declare. Fine, fair enough. But understand that if you are a Trump supporter and you're hoping that President Trump actually comes here for a rally, this is a campaign that looks at data. They're not going to come here if they don't think they have any shot in the world at showing at least a better showing than they did previously. And the Trump administration has been looking at the Pacific Northwest with a keen eye because they believe, whether it's Oregon or Washington State, that they're going to do better than they've done in the past. I don't know if I believe that, but I certainly am hearing from a lot more people who are supporters of Donald Trump than I've heard from in the past. Like coming into the election in 2016, I didn't hear from a whole bunch of Trump supporters, not the way that I'm hearing from them now. John Pence was on this show. An advisor, senior advisor to the campaign, saying it's very likely that Trump is going to come here. If you want that to happen, you should vote and give them that data so they have reason to come here. Just think about it this way. Progressive heads will explode if Donald Trump is here. And I think I would actually get to be on that stage and give a speech. That would be kind of cool. That's why. What do you think the Trump team keeps coming on the show? You have influence. Make that come true. Think about how many Twitter followers I can get. Because you know I'm going to plug Twitter if it's at a Trump rally, because I know that's going to get TV coverage. I'm just going to throw in everything. I've been doing this a little bit. I've been trying to sneak it into my Fox News hits. I keep wanting to say, you know, I was talking about this on Twitter the other day, just to remind people I have Twitter. I'm going to do that for sure. For sure. When it comes to that. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Wait, what?
So one last political issue. CNN has been doing, I kind of feel like, 10,000 town hall events at this point, because literally every day this week and last week, I think they've had different town halls, and they're having multiple town halls with candidates just at different times. Am I crazy on this? Producer David?
No, I have definitely noticed it.
Like, I was trying to think, well, maybe it's a rerun for... No, every day they've got all the candidates up there. Elizabeth Warren was one of the candidates last night. She was on with Don Lemon, and she said something that caught a lot of people off guard.
The Trump administration's policy that banned mini-flavored e-cigarettes went into effect. Does President Trump deserve some credit for that?
Actually, yes. And the head of FDA who did this, I spoke to him many times and said I would support him if he did this. Look, when we see movement in the right direction, we have to be willing to stand up and say good, because it is good.
So people were shocked that Elizabeth Warren gave some credit to the Trump administration. And normally I would say, you know what, good for her. Good for her for agreeing with something that President Trump did. Except President Trump's move there was awful. I 100% disagree with this. You want to get rid of e-cigarette flavors. That doesn't make any sense logically. First of all, I reject the idea that just because something is mango flavored or pina colada flavored, kids are automatically going to say, I'm going to get that now. Someone still has to sell it to them, and they'd be selling it to them illegally. But the main reason why I'm against it is, could you not use the exact same argument for flavored vodkas? For flavored hard alcohol? Why are we not getting rid of hard cider? Some of that literally tastes like apple juice. So what's the argument for not getting rid of that? Because you have this incorrect notion of how unsafe e-cigarettes are. Because when you compare e-cigs to traditional cigarettes, it's no question e-cigarettes are safer. They're not safe, but they're safer. So are we getting rid of all the flavored booze? Not a single person has been able, who's taken the position on this show as to why they support banning flavored cigarettes, not a single person could explain why they don't want to ban flavored alcohol, other than, well, you know, not that big of an issue. Is it? Who drinks birthday cake vodka? It's the most disgusting thing. I have to assume it's kids who are drinking that. Adults aren't drinking that. You're listening to the Jason Rant Show. When we come back, there's some problems in Benton County with their sheriff. In fact, the Fraternal Order of Police, their president from the Washington State chapter, he's going to stop by to explain what's going on. But first, let's get you home the right way with Right Way Traffic. Welcome back to the Jason Rancho on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. There's some trouble in Benton County as their sheriff is accused of running the office like a tyrant. In fact, the Benton County Deputy Sheriff's Guild held a no-confidence vote against Sheriff Jerry Hatcher. It's a move that the Washington State Fraternal Order of Police supports. Its president, Marco Montebianco, joins me now. Marco, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Jason, for having me.
So take us through the situation that's unfolding within the Benton County Sheriff's Office.
Well, you know, it's an unfortunate dynamic we have here in the Benton and Franklin County areas altogether. We're a tight-knit community. The officers here and deputies have a very good relationship, standing relationship with their with the community they serve. And whenever there's a situation that brings up allegations towards anybody in law enforcement, it's definitely something we need to keep an eye on. You know, this situation, by the Deputies Guild is definitely something that is a concern for us. You know, when individuals are accused of anything, whether it's a criminal manner or a or something in regards to work performance, we do expect everybody to be held at the same standard.
So what are the actual allegations?
Well, the letter said by our brothers and sisters in Benton County, you know, they're not only are they being treated in their eyes as unfair by the sheriff, but there's also some dynamics with current public filed documents with specific allegations. And, you know, when those come into light, especially with somebody who is an elected official like the sheriff, and when elected officials are also weighing in on the other side and public officials are being named throughout media, it is in the best interest of everybody mm-hmm. that something is investigated, both whether it's criminal or internal, by an outside independent source.
Well, how much of what you were talking about is tied to the allegations against him that are outside the scope of his work as the sheriff? He has been accused by his estranged wife of strangling her. He denies that that happened. He said it was politically motivated, the complaint leveled against him, and the charges were dismissed. Now, obviously, that's going to bring a lot of unwanted attention to the office, but is that of real concern here versus what's going on internally?
I think it's all of it. I mean, there's recent public filed documents that allege a large quantity of ammunition found in his residence, and that have a potential to be paid by taxpayer money that belongs to the county. When you have these type of situations come up, and then the response from the sheriff is to the guild's representation that him as the sheriff has the sole responsibility to investigate whether it's a criminal or an internal matter mm-hmm. on his own case, I think that brings a bad precedence that can cause the community that we serve to have mistrust towards law enforcement.
Just joining us, we are talking with the president of the Washington State Fraternal Order of Police, Marco Montablanco, about allegations leveled against the sheriff in Benton County, Jerry Hatcher. The allegations that were printed in the Tri-City Herald essentially say that a main sticking point for deputies and other staff members within the office is that he treats them like a tyrant. So I suppose a question I have based on some of the conversations you've had so far with members of the guild, is this just a difference of opinion in leadership style, or is this to the point of a legitimate toxic environment?
Well, if you look at how the whole dynamic is with the sheriff being elected, you're talking about an entire group of law enforcement officers within an agency who openly supported and helped him get elected mm-hmm. as sheriff. All of a sudden, in a very, very short period of time, have had some major concerns that have been brought up and obviously sent letters of not supporting him. You know, I think we need to look at that. Everybody does, as citizens, and wonder why that is. And why there's such a drastic change.
Mm-hmm. Well, Sheriff Hatcher, talking with the Tri-City Herald, said essentially that he felt like he was blindsided by these complaints, and he argues that it's just a small group of people within his office are upset. Is he downplaying the amount of concern from his office?
You know, unfortunately, that is the case. You know, when you have a letter that has been provided by the guild, but also information by all individuals within that office, that openly support the direction that the guild has gone. It's more than just a handful of people, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So as any leader, even with myself as a president of an organization, if there are major issues within the organization, mm-hmm. the responsibility would fall on my shoulders, and it should fall on the sheriff's shoulders as well.
And we are inviting Sheriff Hatcher onto the show to give his side of things. If he says yes to our invitation, we'll certainly have him on the show. If you're just joining us, we're talking with Marco Montablanco. He's the president of the Washington State Fraternal Order of Police. They are calling for an investigation, an independent investigation into allegations made against the sheriff for a less than stellar work environment, to say the least. You've decided to call for this investigation. The Benton County Commissioner's Office, the Teamsters, apparently stopped short of that kind of call. So why are you going that extra step and not them?
Again, it has to do with the political dynamic there is in Benton and Franklin County. I mean, when you have multiple public officials weighing in on an issue as well as being talked about in the media, the one thing we want to avoid is there's three things specifically. We want to make sure that there is a proper due process, for anybody, but that the investigation is done in a way that would limit any scrutiny that may be brought up, whether it's for favoritism or bias on either mm-hmm. side, but also not to put local agencies in this type of situation, investigating any type of situation like this when it's involving an elected official, because that will cause not only a division within the law enforcement region where we've had such a great working relationship, but it would also cause a division with our community that we've worked so hard to have that trust from them.
So how does the alleged behavior actually impact the office, meaning the deputies, the staff members who are working there? Is this simply them just feeling uncomfortable working in that environment, or is this, or are you starting to see the signs of this spilling out into the public?
Well, the fact that it's, you know, there's a lot of things that are being brought out into the public eye. Obviously, it has gone more into the public now, which is obviously should be a concern for everybody. And obviously, there is a huge disconnect within that office of some sort that needs to be addressed and needs to be brought out and fixed.
So then let's go down this world for a moment that the investigation happens and they don't find anything that warrants, you know, any sort of pressure to get him to step aside. And he decides to run for re-election and he ends up winning. I mean, what are some of the long-term impacts of all of this?
Well, you know, there's long-term impacts for, you know,
staffing,
not only individuals that work there who still have to work under these environments. But there has been no true solution on how to fix the disconnect that's gone on. And so it's just going to continue to create an environment within that agency that is going to be toxic.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate the work that you're doing to highlight these issues. We obviously back law enforcement on the show, and we want to make sure that, you know, the boots on the ground, the people who are doing all the work, are being treated fairly within any department that they happen to work for. Again, though, out of fairness, we are reaching out to the sheriff to have him on to give us his side of things. We've been talking with Marco Monteblanco. He is the president of the Washington State Fraternal Order of Police. Thank you so much for stopping by. We wish you the best of luck as you try to figure this all out.
Thank you very much, Jason.
Absolutely. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. When we come back, CNN is trying really, really, really hard to get guests to attack President Trump over his response to the coronavirus. So far, it's been kind of falling flat. We'll tell you how when we come back. Right now, though, let's get you home the right way with Right Way Traffic. Welcome back to the Jason Rancho. Thank you so much for tuning in. Before we get to the story of coronavirus and the media and how they are trying desperately to use this to go after Donald Trump, we have an announcement coming up as to who is going to be our brand new morning show host. Saul Spady has announced that tomorrow is his last day, which means there's going to be a newbie in town on Monday. I am going to give the details at 6:30 on our Facebook page. So if you're not already on our Facebook page, you should text the keyword Facebook to 1-800-465-8770. Text Facebook to 1-800-465-8770. I'll send you a link to my Facebook page. Hit the follow button. And then at 6:30, I'm going to tell you who is going to take over mornings on KTTH. So I'm excited to make that announcement. We're sad to see Saul Spady go. He's still going to be a part of this station. He's still going to be a voice that you hear on various shows throughout the day. But we have a brand new morning show starting on Monday. I will say that it's not me. People were speculating, producer David, as to whether or not I was going to go back to a schedule of going to bed at 7 p.m. and then waking up at 3:30, and it is no.
I think it would be brave if you still did this time slot and also did the
morning
time slot.
And do that, yeah, just 6 hours, just nonstop.
Everyone wants to hear your voice.
Well, that is true, especially myself. So let's talk about the coronavirus. Como News says that a Seattle-based medical research facility is expected to be the first in the nation to begin clinical testing of a vaccine to use against the coronavirus. Rebecca Hughes is a spokesperson for Kaiser Permanente Washington Health Research Institute and said that it was selected by the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases as the first to begin testing of a coronavirus vaccine, which is exactly how I believe Resident Evil started, the movie Resident Evil. Didn't it kind of start along the, we're supposed to start a virus, vaccine virus, and then all of a sudden they became the, they're not zombies, but whatever it was they were in that movie. Then they killed everybody.
Yeah, sure. Or like I Am Legend, I feel like.
Yes. That's an underrated end of times movie.
I know. I dug it.
It's because the dog dies. I mean, spoiler.
Gotta remind
but
us.
I mean, just sad. So I'm terrified of that. Meanwhile, I'm terrified of people actually believing that somehow the United States is not up to task in dealing with this. I don't believe any country is going to be as best suited as humanly possible for this because it's a brand new and quickly spreading virus. But man, CNN is going overboard. They are just trying to rip into Donald Trump nonstop. They had John Harwood, the White House correspondent.
You also have the president appointing Mike Pence saying he's really good on health. We all remember that as governor of Indiana, he struggled to cope with a public health crisis on HIV by delaying needle exchanges. That had real consequences in terms of lives lost. So,
If only he was like Jay Inslee and Mayor Jenny Durkin, as we have an alarming rise in heroin deaths, overdoses here in Washington State. Then CNN's John Avalon ripped into Donald Trump.
Here's the thing, Mr. President.
Okay, tell us.
Pandemics don't care about politics.
Oh, they don't?
Remember, the Chinese impulse to cover up may have helped lead to this outbreak. And here in the United States, the Trump administration's war on science has left us vulnerable. Remember, the Trump administration has been shutting down research committees and silencing scientists and making climate crisis denial a matter of public policy. But it should still shock you that Trump slashed the government agencies that would have been responsible for handling an outbreak. With money running tight, the CDC planned to cut its global pandemic prevention efforts by 80%, cutting activities in 39 countries, including China. Trump administration also shut down the Global Health Security Unit of the National Security Council, disbanding the very office Obama opened to handle pandemics during the Ebola crisis.
Oh, man, if only we were as good as Obama, we say, as there have been not as many confirmed cases of coronavirus and not a single death yet in the United States. Got it. Thanks. So CNN, as an institution, as a media organization, has taken the anti-Trump position on this. Not a shock. I mean, CNN has kind of leaned into that. That's what they do. They become like MSNBC, but just dishonest about it. That's why I respect MSNBC way more than I respect CNN. But what was kind of interesting was they were trying to get the Democratic guests, members of Congress, who were coming on to talk against the Trump administration. And what appears to be a first, Eric Swalwell, congressman from California, was all like, no, I'm not going to do it.
I don't want to attack the president on this. I want to work with him and educate him and be a part of the solution, because we can't afford a crisis, whatever his motives are to avoid one. We want to get this right. So it's not just developing a vaccine, which I believe is about a year out from the health experts I've spoken to, but making sure locally that our hospitals are ready, making sure that we are able to not only have a cure in a year, but early detection is critically important.
So, you know, good for him for taking that position. Nah, you know what? I know you want me to bash the president. I'm not just not going to do it. It was a little condescending. I'm going to educate him. But okay, fine. But generally, Eric Swalwell has acted as an attack dog against the president no matter what. And I'm glad he's looking at this and saying, you know what? We're probably going to have some disagreements on this, but I want to do what's best for this country. Representative Debbie Dingell, who has a reason to go after Donald Trump for the nasty thing that he said about her late husband, she did the same exact thing.
I don't think this is a time to take shots. I think this is a time for all of us to work together.
So, again, kudos to them. Kudos for them for doing that. CNN is so transparent in what they're trying to do. Meanwhile, we've got a whole bunch of college campuses across the state with study abroad programs that have decided to either scale them back or completely suspend them thanks to the coronavirus. The UW had their study abroad programs to China canceled for the remainder of the year. New trips to South Korea have to go through now a review process. Gonzaga told its students that are currently studying in Florence to pack up and come home.
Needless to say, I was very disappointed. You know, we're only halfway through the program.
Let's be clear. Studying abroad in Italy, you're not really studying. I mean, let's just stop this nonsense. That's Grant Oldfield. He is a sophomore talking with Cairo 7 TV.
We got an email from Gonzaga saying that, unfortunately, the program is canceled, and it suggested that all students return back to their homes in the United States immediately.
I wonder if it said we suggest you return home. I mean, you do still have an enrollment at Gonzaga. Don't you just kind of have to actually go back? He's worried that he might have caught the coronavirus, which probably means if he's serious about that, he's going to be stuck there.
We're surrounded by a lot of people, and there's definitely concern among me and my friends of potentially catching this deadly disease.
Yeah, so he's kind of freaking out, but you know what? Frankly, it would look bad if Gonzaga didn't take this seriously.
You know, God forbid, if a student did catch corona at Gonzaga in Florence, it would obviously look very bad on the school for not having made the decision to send kids back in the first place.
So that kind of sucks, spending a semester abroad pretending that you're actually studying when what you're doing is just ignoring your schoolwork so you can have fun in a foreign country and get credit for it as if you actually did the work. I do kind of feel bad. The thing is, again, let's take this as an opportunity to remind folks that while, yes, the coronavirus is very contagious, more contagious than the flu, it's not going to kill you unless you already have some kind of issue health-wise. If you are compromised because of your age, both very young or very old, and you've already got a compromised immune system, yes, it's a threat. Doesn't mean we shouldn't be taking this seriously, but especially when we're talking about kids overseas, we can bring it down a little bit. It's Jason Rancho.